You. To my right is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and to my left is Justice Brian Walker, and I'm Bonnie Sutter, the Chief of the Court. It's my understanding that the parties are ready to begin and are here, and so we'll hear from you first. Miss, is it Barrier?
Barrier.
Barrier.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Mm-hmm.
May it please the court. No balance is due and owed. Because no balance is due and owed, NorTex governmental immunity under the Texas Local Government Code mandates reversing the trial court's denial of its plea to the jurisdiction. While we raise 2 points of error in our brief, I will spend the majority of my time focusing on the first point of error related to damages. Because, as we contend, Section 271.153(a)(1) is the gatekeeper statute. That statute must be satisfied in order for NorTex to have waived its governmental immunity. As this court knows and has recognized in its cases, qualifying local governmental entities such as NorTex have immunity from suit for all purposes unless that immunity is specifically waived. While NorTex concedes that on August 10th of 2020, NorTex and the City of Bellevue entered into an interlocal agreement that satisfies the writing requirement only in Section 271.152, no other provisions of the local government code that are necessary for essential terms have been satisfied. In fact, as the court will note in footnote 1, this agreement may never have come into existence. There is conditional language in the very first sentence of the agreement, which is at the clerk record 42. But even if we get past the conditional language, the essential terms don't exist, which means waiver still exists. Damages are an essential term to the contract. This court in City of Colleyville versus Newman specifically addressed this issue and how the two sections, 271.152 and 271.153, are intertwined to determine essential terms. In fact, in City of Colleyville, this court clarified that this is a jurisdictional issue. The language in 271.153 sets forth the limited breach of contract damages recoverable under a contract for which immunity would otherwise be waived. Recoverable damages fit in two categories unless those damages are expressly excluded by 271.153B. In this case, we never have to get to 153B. Looking at the statutory language in 153A1, it includes the two forms of damages, the balance due and owing, which we call in our briefing the promised payment, and secondly, the amount of compensation for increased cost caused by owner delay. We call those the delay damages.
And in those kind of situations, it's your position that it has to be something that was delineated in the contract, and then it's the difference between what's delineated in the contract and the costs that were incurred after the fact. Is that correct?
Yes, Justice Walker. We believe that this is an eight corners test, as I'll call it. We'll take the four corners of the unambiguous contract, which this court determines as a matter of law, and the four corners of the statute 271.152 and 271.153, and the court overlays those in making its decision. And because this is a de novo decision and all issues that we believe need to be decided are as a matter of law, that's how we would overlay those statutes.
So I've got maybe a more fundamental question. So it's my understanding, I take it that the city's position is that it's y'all's fault because the environmental packet was not accepted right away. But from looking at the timeline, it seems to me that the city might have jumped the gun by signing that contract with Bowles Construction before their funding was actually approved. And so Is that, am I understanding that correctly? And wasn't that the thing that gave rise to their damages?
Justice Kerr, we believe you have nailed exactly what gave rise to their damages. But in analyzing this case for purposes of jurisdiction, we never have to reach that question, because what the city seeks as damages are never outlined in the contract. And this court is bound by the terms of the contract to determine whether there was an amount due and owed by Nortex. The city was to pay Nortex a fee. Nortex was the party rendering services. Nortex would have been entitled to a fee, but if you look at the terms of the contract, there's nothing that would give rise to the city being entitled to money back from Nortex. The city in its briefing does not address due and owed under 153A1 or 2, and we believe that's a fatal flaw because that section is determinative. When we look at the contract, we are constrained by its terms. This court has held that, and the Texas Supreme Court has held, that we can't add terms to the contract. We can't remove terms from the contract in order to achieve a desired outcome. In this case, to accept the city's position that the $275,000 would somehow fit within this contractual structure, terms would necessarily have to be added. In fact, it was always contemplated, and the language of the contract is clear, that the contract was conditioned upon a grant being funded, not by Nortex, but by the Texas Department of Agriculture. And when we look at the first page of the contract, we see in bold what happens if that grant is not funded. It automatically terminates. The language says shall be terminated. It's not permissive. It's mandatory. The contract shall be terminated if the grant does not fund. That language is inconsistent with a claim that Nortex somehow guaranteed payment of $275,000, as the city would like this court to find. We do not believe that the city can get past Section 271-153A1. So we never have to look at the next issue. Are these direct damages versus consequential damages? But the city spends significant time in its brief addressing that point, direct versus consequential. At best, the $275,000 would be a consequential damage, which is expressly excluded under Texas Local Government Code Section 271B. When we look at what makes something a direct damage versus a consequential damage, we actually look to the breaching party's perspective. So the Texas Supreme Court in Meade versus Johnson said that to be a direct damage, the loss has to be a probable consequence from the breaching party's perspective. Well, reading this contract, what could have been the breaching party, Nortex's perspective? That it would not receive its fee of up to $35,000. That's all the contract provides for. So it could not have been probable consequence of a breach by Nortex that it would owe $275,000. The city contends that it can recover the grant value from Nortex because the purpose of the agreement was to obtain grant funding. And it says the words I love anytime I read them in law, ipso facto, it had to be direct damages. We don't believe ipso facto comes into play in an unambiguous contract case that never identifies the $275,000 as a potential damage. As we've said, looking at the eight corners, the contract and the statute, this case never gets to direct versus consequential because there is no amount due and owing. The city's argument is contradicted by the plain language of the agreement. The grant funding was to come from the Department of Agriculture, not Nortex. It was Nortex's role to help request the grant, and then Nortex would be entitled to a fee for performing certain services. If the grant failed, the contract's terminated immediately.
Is it your position then? I mean, kind of in the opposite of what Justice Kerr asked, you know, obviously the other side is saying that it was NorTex's fault that they didn't get the grant because they messed up their paperwork or whatever. Is your position, even if NorTex had done that, it's still irrelevant that it because of the damages issue, because of the lack of damages in the contract?
Yes, Justice Walker. We believe that it doesn't matter who did what, that this court, like the trial court, was constrained by what is in the contract, what is in the statute. If the contract does not provide that those damages would be recoverable, they can't be added in. And in fact, this court in City of Willow Park versus ENS and CNM in 2014 specifically addressed the issue of when there's a conflict between contract stated damages and the statute prevails. And I raise that issue because in the briefing, they speak of a line in the interlocutory governmental agreement that speaks of and other damages that can be awarded. Well, what this court said in City of Willow Park is the parties can't contract, a governmental entity can't contract to be held liable for damages that exceed the local government code. So we still have to look at 271.153, what can a local governmental entity contract for? It can contract to be held responsible for damages due and owing under A1. And it cannot contract for damages that would be excluded under B.
Let me interject a question. So pretend like I don't know anything about contract law and just going through kind of the basic analysis of this. You know, we're talking about jurisdiction. We're talking about times when there has been immunity is waived. And your position is that because of the statute, those terms are necessary. I guess if there was a such thing as an implied term in a contract, your position would be it wouldn't matter in this analysis because of the strict confines and the verbiage that's in the statute itself.
Yes, Justice Walker, implied terms cannot come into play in this situation because the Texas Local Government Code is very specific, and the case law, both the Texas Supreme Court, this court, and other sister courts of appeals have held that we cannot add language in to the contract. So we are bound by what are the terms of the contract, what are the terms of the statute, and how do they go together for purposes of deciding jurisdiction. Briefly, in the time I have remaining, I'd like to address our other point, which is the promissory estoppel claim. Very recently, this court, in March of 2025, in McDaniel versus Crawley ISD, 2025, Westlaw, 876-777, on a panel in which Chief Justice Southerith presided, held that quasi-contractual claims such as promissory estoppel cannot be waived under Section 271.152. When this court made that ruling in McDaniel versus Crawley, it joined its sister court of appeals in El Paso, San Antonio, and Houston's first district in ruling that promissory estoppel is not a waivable claim by an entity such as NorTex. In fact, in the Houston's First District Court of Appeals case, City of Deer Park versus Ibarra, the court stated that promissory estoppel is fundamentally premised on the absence of a contract. The absence of a contract, which under Section 271.152, there is an express requirement of such a contract. So the promissory estoppel claim fails under the statutory language and fails under this court's ruling and the sister court of appeals ruling. This court had previously ruled on a quantum Merowit case and had made a similar decision with respect to these quasi-contractual arguments. They simply don't exist in governmental immunity cases. As we have pled in our brief, we are asking this court to grant NorTex's plea to the jurisdiction, reverse the trial court's decision. Governmental immunity has not been waived under contract or under the promissory estoppel theory. We ask this court to remand this case back to the trial court to determine an appropriate award of attorney's fees to Nortex as the prevailing party.
Thank you. Mr. Earp?
Thank you, Justice Sutter. May it please the court, my name is Brandon Earp. I am an attorney in Bowie, Texas, and I represent the city of Bellevue, which is a municipality in southern Clay County of about 300 and some odd people, with an annual budget of about $200,000. So I bring that up because obviously this contract with Nortex was extremely important to them in developing their infrastructure. The Nortex in this case fails to tell the court one very important thing, and that is that this contract, or this grant, I should say, with the Texas Department of Agriculture was granted. There's been no evidence otherwise. The grant was granted. It just simply was not funded. It was in the process of getting to that point when the court decided, or excuse me, when the Texas Department of Agriculture decided that it would be terminated. I can't remember which of you asked, but I will say that the termination was not so much because just of the environmental review, but there was also the issue of whether or not the city also contracted to have the infrastructure improvements done prior to the authority to grant funds being issued by the Texas Department of Agriculture. The timeline shows that that occurred in January of 2022. Excuse me, in January of 2022, and then the actual termination took place in September of 2022. The reason I bring that up is because it's very important to understand that the reason why this contract was terminated, for both instances, both the failure of the environmental reviews to be correctly filed by Nortex, but also the contracting with the contractor to do the infrastructure improvements, was also at the instance of Nortex as well. You see, the city relied entirely on Nortex to provide it the information that it needed as to the steps that it had to take. So when Nortex told the city of Bellevue to go ahead and contract with the contractor and get the work done, which they did do in January of 2022, Bellevue had no reason not to do that. And so at that point, they went ahead and awarded a contract to Bowles Construction Company to construct 2,200 feet of 6-inch water line and fire hydrants and pavement repairs along Betts Street in Bellevue. They went ahead and awarded that, and they went ahead and had Bowles Construction do the work, which was completed in April of 2022. At that time, the environmental reviews were still incorrect. In fact, it took three times for Nortex to file an environmental review packet for it to be done correctly. So those issues are important for the court to understand before we get into the arguments that Nortex is making. It's certainly true, and I don't intend to belabor the point that immunity in this case has to be waived, but it can be waived by contract, as Chapter 271 of the Texas Local Government Code says. In this case, Nortex is really not challenged on appeal whether or not immunity was waived by that contract. Instead, they want to focus on the damages in this issue. And that is important because 271.153 does limit those damages. There's no doubt about it. However, what Nortex fails to tell the court and explain to the court is the holding of the Texas Supreme Court in its own case that that Nortex cited, Zachary Construction Corporation versus Port of Houston Authority of Harris County, which is a 2014 Texas Supreme Court case, where the Texas Supreme Court laid out, and I quote, a balance due and owed under the contract, as in, and I'm interjecting, as in Texas Local Government Code 271.153B, is simply the amount of damages for breach of contract payable and unpaid. Direct damages for breach, the necessary and usual result of the defendant's wrongful act, certainly qualify.
State that last part again.
The last sentence says, direct damages for breach, the necessary and usual result of the defendant's wrongful act, certainly qualify.
I mean, in that case, I assume they're talking about an amount that was actually delineated in the contract. Is that correct?
No, sir, they're not. Instead, it makes it quite clear that there are damages out there that are considered to be direct damages that are not delineated in the contract. That, you know, as it says here, that they usually result from the defendant's wrongful act. In this case, the City of Bellevue is asking for just such damages. We're asking for damages that have resulted because of NorTex's failure to abide by its contractual requirements. And so that in that case, it is not needed to be delineated in the contract, unlike what NorTex is saying. In fact, the courts have been very clear about that, that there are such damages out there that you know, are foreseeable, but yet are not found in contracts, and still those damages can be collected.
What would you say about opposing counsel's position that there are Supreme Court opinions, Texas Supreme Court opinions, that say terms cannot be added to a contract?
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. I don't think that that's what we're doing here at all, however. Instead, what we're doing, and there's no statutes or case law that I'm familiar with that would contradict Zachary Construction, where it says that the damages that in this case, the City of Bellevue are asking for have to be delineated in the contract. Otherwise, contracts would be forever long, and lawyers would spend all their time trying to come up with what are all the possible scenarios where damages might be, you know, might be awarded. But in this case, the question is the damages that we're seeking, that the City of Bellevue is seeking, are they foreseeable by the parties at the time that the contract was entered? Certainly they are. In this particular instance, the damages that we're asking for are simply damages to put the city back into the position that they should have been had NorTex not breached its contract.
Let me stop you there.
Yes, sir.
So your position at the trial court level and in your briefing is that, you know, the whole purpose of the contract was to write the grant, essentially, to get those funds. And because they ultimately did get those funds, that obviously that was reasonably foreseeable.
Absolutely.
And then Justice Kerr asked a question on the beginning to opposing counsel about this idea of the city being at fault and the cause. And you've kind of, you brought that up early, that you conceded there was some of that going
yes,
on.
Yes, sir.
You don't think that rises to the level of, even if your analysis is correct, that does not prevent then essentially us from being able to affirm this. I mean, and ultimately saying that you're not entitled to the damages.
I would say that if the City of Bellevue was entirely at fault for doing that. However, in this case, the record, the evidence that was presented to the court in form of letters and so forth back and forth clearly shows that the City of Bellevue was relying on NorTex. They were relying on them to fulfill the duties that they had under the contract, which was to not only seek the grant for them, but administer the grant once they received it. In this case, NorTex undertook to do that, to administer the grant. However, in doing so, the information that they gave the City of Bellevue was incorrect. It was not only incorrect, but it caused the breach.
Is there anything in the record, and forgive me, I can't remember this, but anything in the record that specifically says, that shows that NorTex told Bellevue that they could move forward with the contractor?
Yes, sir. If you'll give me just a minute, I can tell you where it exactly is.
There is a letter, and it is contained at Clerk's Record, page 160, where Robert Ratliff, the mayor of Bellevue, talks about the fact that they've gone through the process, and you'll have to forgive me, Justice Walker, I can't, there it is. It states, on January 26, 2022, after NorTex Regional Planning Commission had cleared Bowles Construction Company as required through the government system for award management, a construction contract was awarded to Bowles Construction, and on March 16th, the construction notice to proceed was issued.
Is that the same thing as, because the way I took your earlier comment was that NorTex basically told Bellevue, yeah, you can go ahead and enter a contract because it's all going to be okay in the end. But what you just read, maybe I didn't hear it right, but it sounded like something a little different?
Well, it's a process, but I was basically paraphrasing the process originally, which is Nortex has to go through, and the City of Bellevue has to go through a process by which to award contracts, just like any city does. In this case, Nortex was, as part of the administration of the grant, was responsible for helping them through that process. What Nortex did is to say at some point, We've fulfilled those requirements. You're ready to go. Go ahead and contract with Bowles Construction and do the work. And that's, Justice Kerr, how I would answer that question is to say, although that's contractees, it essentially means that Nortex said, go for it, and they did. And it just so happens that when they did start the construction, or at least let the contract and then begin the construction, it happened to be quite a bit of time before the actual authority to grant funds was issued. And the reason for that was because Nortex didn't file their environmental reviews. But didn't
TDA's termination letter in September of 2022 point the finger most specifically at the fact that the Bowles construction contract had been entered into first?
I would agree with that, but I would also add that if you'll really read the letter, it also points out the environmental review errors and deficiencies as another reason why. Both of those things obviously violate the federal codes that are cited in that letter, and both of those things were laid out as reasons. In fact, the evidence that's been provided, the letters back and forth and so forth, clearly shows that everybody believed that the environmental reviews were really the issue in this case. And the reason that is because Nortex never, you know, it took three times for them to finally get it right. And time was passing, and obviously they still didn't have them right when they told the City of Bellevue to go ahead and do the work. So it's important in this case to take into account the nature of the damages that is being requested, and that ultimately is, as Nortex pointed out earlier, the difference between direct damages and consequential damages, because all the case law is very clear that direct damages are damages that can be ultimately collected by a person or an entity suing a governmental entity, that the immunity can be waived with regards to direct damages, while 271-153B, whichever subparagraph it is, says that consequential damages cannot be sued for, cannot be received. So the difference is very important. Direct damages are those that the breaching party is conclusively, and I'm quoting San Antonio River Authority versus Austin Bridge, which is another Supreme Court case from 2020, it says, quote, conclusively presumed to have foreseen as a result of its breach, because they are the necessary and usual result of and flow naturally and necessarily from that wrongful act. And again, units of government who waive immunity can be liable for claims of direct damages, and that comes from that same case. In fact, the Supreme Court says, because damages sought flowed from the party's failure to adhere to contract, they were direct damages and waived the party's immunities claim. So that's exactly what we're saying here. And Your Honor, we have briefed pretty thoroughly the fact that benefit of the bargain, or what they call expectancy damages, that those damages are direct damages. And that is exactly what the City of Bellevue is asking for. The purpose of expectancy or benefit of the bargain damages is to restore the non-breaching party to the same economic position it would have been in had the contract not been breached by awarding it what it would have received had it not been breached. That is a Houston 14th District case called Parkway Dental Association versus Ho Huang Properties LP. And the point of my bringing that up is that those expectancy and benefit of the bargain damages are direct damages as a matter of law. In fact, this court held that very thing in 2012 in the Daimler Chrysler Motors versus Manuel case. And the Texas Supreme Court also held it in Atrium Medical Center versus Houston Red Sea LLC. And that's a 2020 Supreme Court case. Those are the exact damages that Bellevue is seeking in this case. The grant was given. It was awarded. Bellevue had no reason not to think that the $275,000 that it needed to do the work was not going to be available to it. It didn't have any way to know that Nortex wasn't getting the job done as it was supposed to under its contract. The payment was expected to be made from the grant funds that Bellevue would have received, and that's exactly what Bellevue is asking for here. Had it not been for the breach of contract by Nortex, then Bellevue would have had the money to pay these contractors that it now owes $275,000. These damages are direct damages because they're incurred as a consequence of Nortex's failure to do the things necessary to complete the grant. Had the environmental reviews been filed correctly, had they not told Bellevue to go ahead with the work, all things that Bellevue had no reason not to trust them to do, to give them the advice to do, had that not happened, then Bellevue would have had the money, the work would have been completed, and they would have been able to pay these contractors. And that has not been refuted. Yes, sir?
I have kind of a factual-based question. You know, I looked at the email, and I remembered the TDA corresponding with the city, letting the city know that funds had been approved. And I'm looking at this, and there's this language here that says, you know, the authority to use grant funds is granted based on the certifying official signature, certifying that all required procedures have been completed. And I was trying to figure out who the certifying official is. Is that somebody that worked for Nortex?
Yeah. Yes, Justice Walker. I'm not sure exactly who that would be, but that would be, or I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. I believe that certifying official would be somebody in TDA. That's what I think is that would have been, and again, that's just my speculation. I believe that is where TDA would have said that everything that you're supposed to have completed has been completed, and we give you the ability to do that. And that is essentially what that authority to grant funds, and I assume that's what you're looking at.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, authority to use grant funds, and then it talks about it's a formal release of funds. But then they have that really interesting language in there that then says, this is not an indication that TDA has reviewed and approved the entire environmental review record for the project. And of course, they ultimately do, and that's part of the process that of why this all fell apart.
Yes, sir. My understanding is that there was going to be another environmental review after the work was completed. And I think that's what that's referring to, is that we're not going to completely give you, you know, here's a check until all of these steps have been followed. And so I believe that that's what that's referring
to. We don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure because we never got to that point. Yes, sir. Instead, what happened was the environmental reviews, as I said before, were not done correctly. It took three different times for them to finally be corrected. And Nortex didn't actually complete those environmental reviews until just before that authority to grant funds was issued. Nortex delivered a third amended.
Well, I have another question.
Yes, sir.
This was dated June 15th, 2022.
Yes, sir.
And Nortex is working with Bellevue at this process to get the grant.
Yes, sir.
We have to assume they were aware of the initial approval of grant funds.
Yes, sir.
And everything stayed in process until they got the subsequent letter from TDA in September?
Yes, sir, September the 19th.
And so at the very least, whether there was a specific, you know, authorization from Nortex, you need to move forward with this, you have the money in play, you can hire the contractor, you could make the argument there was at least a tacit acknowledgement because they were well aware of the project moving forward, and I assume they were supportive of it until everything fell apart in September.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, at the time that the contract was signed with Bowles Construction and the city, Nortex had a representative there in the room as the contract was being signed. They were giving the city of Bellevue the instruction to go ahead and do this thing.
Is this in the record somewhere?
Honestly, ma'am, I think it just in that one letter does it indicate that that was the case. I'm not sure that it says that.
And does the record anywhere lay out how and when TDA actually learned that the street improvements had been made?
Yes, ma'am, it does. In the September the 19th letter, the TDA, it doesn't, I don't believe it says an exact date, but it does say that Nortex, on July 18th, 2022, Nortex submitted a response to TDA for monitoring review, and it, at that point, it confirmed, Nortex confirmed that Bellevue had contracted with Bowles Construction.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm out of time.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Thank you. Response?
May I proceed? No amount is due and owing. We don't get to a question of direct versus consequential unless we satisfy that the amount was due and owing. Counsel cited this court to the Texas Supreme Court case in Zachary versus Port of Houston Authority. That is not the case we have here. In the Zachary case, you had a specific contract that had a balance due and owing referenced in it. You had a time is of the essence clause, and damages were awarded as due and owing under A1 and delay damages under A2, specifically damages called for in the statute. Your Honors have asked many factual questions, and I will disagree factually with the recitation that was made by my learned colleague. In fact, if we look at the record, Court Record 157, it is a conditional award of a grant. And as Justice Walker pointed out, it has some very specific things that must occur before funding would flow from it. If we look at the court record at 160, as Justice Kerr pointed out, it does not say sign the contract. It talks about a contractor being cleared for hiring without ever giving any authorization to sign. And moreover, the comments about Nortex being in the room does not exist anywhere in this record. Counsel for the city talks about these expectancy damages, and it cites the court to cases that do not involve local governmental entities subject to immunity under 271, 152, and 153. They really have no bases in this argument because we're not talking about private citizens. We're talking about an entity like Nortex. And when we look at this agreement, we understand the city wants $275,000 that it spent without permission. Nortex got no money under the express terms of the contract for providing any grant assistance. When we talk about environmental assistance, you have to look at phase two of the writing for Nortex to have an obligation to provide that environmental assistance. And that's when Nortex would begin earning its fee. Could the city have come back and sued for any fee it paid Nortex? Yes. That would have been an amount the city could claim it did not owe under a due and owing provision, because that $35,000 would have been due and owing to Nortex. But that's not the case we have here. What we have is the city trying to get its hope, its dream, of a grant that it knew was never guaranteed. The very first page of the agreement sets out the conditional nature of this grant. More than five times when we look at this contract, it talks about the fact that this grant is not guaranteed, that the Texas Department of Agriculture will be providing the funding, not Nortex. Had there been any language in this contract that the city could point to say that Nortex had any reason to foresee, the language of the Texas Supreme Court and the language of this court on direct damages, to foresee that Nortex could end up owing the $275,000, they would have an argument that immunity has been waived. But there is no such language. And because 271-153 damages are, as this court said in City of Colleyville, essential terms to a contract under 271-152, there is no waiver by Nortex. The trial court erred in denying Nortex's plea to the jurisdiction with respect to the contract and with respect to promissory estoppel. And this court should reverse that decision, grant Nortex its plea to the jurisdiction, and allow it to proceed in recovering its attorney's fees. There is no amount due and owing, and the city never addressed it, even in their argument.
Counselors, we appreciate your arguments here today. They were very helpful to the court. Your case has now been submitted, and you are free to go about your business.